Today's Taisho is on case 13 in the Gate of No Barrier, the U Men Kwan. Tokusan holds his bowls. One day, Tokusan went down toward the dining room holding his bowls. Seppo met him and asked, "Where are you off to with your bowls? The bell has not yet rung, the drum has not yet sounded." Tokusan turned and went back to his room. Seppo mentioned this to Ganto, who remarked, "Tokusan is renowned, but he does not know the last word of Zen." Tokusan heard about this remark and sent his attendant to fetch Ganto. "Do you not approve of me?" he asked. Ganto whispered his meaning. Tokusan said nothing at the time. But the next day he ascended the rostrum, and behold, he was very different from usual. Ganto, going toward the front hall, clapped his hands and loudly said, "Congratulations, our old man has finally got the last word. From now on, nobody in this whole country can outdo him." Mumon's comment, "As for the last word, neither Ganto nor Tokusan has ever dreamed of it. When you look into the matter, you find they are like puppets on the shelf." Mumon's verse, "If you realize the first, you realize the last. The first and the last are not one word." Today is day two of our spring sesshin, and I want to compliment everybody on making a wonderful effort. This is always a challenge, isn't it? You come here and give up many things to be here. And to be honest with you, I think it takes great strength of character to come to sesshin, period. It just takes great strength of character. I have known many people who have hovered on the edges of Zen practice in their lives. You know, they're able to sit a little bit. They come to sit, or over the years they've come to other places where I practice to sit. And you know, sooner or later, if you're in Zen world, you hear about sesshin. And sooner or later, if you're going to practice Zen, you're going to have to come to sesshin. Hopefully, you know, once or twice a year at the minimum. And, you know, this is part of Zen practice. But the world is full of people who don't come to sesshin. You know, they have they sense, maybe they have heard, maybe they haven't heard, but they sense that it's going to be a challenge and it might be a little uncomfortable. And they're not going to get that much sleep and etc., etc. So, you know, I think it takes great strength of character to come here, period. It's admirable just in itself. Anybody who has this much dedication to truth or enlightenment or freedom, whatever you want to call it, anybody who is able to commit herself or himself to this degree, I think is worthy of great respect. And I cannot convey to you how much respect I have for all of you. The interesting thing about Zen is that people come to sesshin somewhat uncertain of the outcome. So, you know, in my business, if you want to get a promotion, you have to write a book. and get the book published. And then you get a 10% salary increase. It's guaranteed. It's written into the contract. So tomorrow, if I wanted to increase my salary by 10%, I would have to write a book. And the book I would write would take me about 6 years to finish because I'm a slow writer. And when it was published, no one would read it because it's an academic book. But it doesn't matter because I get my 10%, right? When you come to Zen practice, it's not like that. It's a crapshoot, right? Because first of all, you don't know for sure if there is such a thing as enlightenment. Right? You don't know. Till it's happened to you, you don't know. So there's always a kind of residual uncertainty about that. First of all, you don't know if that's true. Second, you don't know if you're going to have an enlightenment experience. Right? That's number two. You don't know if the teacher's crazy or not, really. Many uncertainties. So, you know, people are able to overcome their innate fear of the new, their fear of failure, which is very profound and is part of the koan here today. They're able to overcome their various phobias and their various forms of distrust and to put themselves on the line. And that's really, I think, admirable and remarkable and very moving. You know, people are willing to put their lives on the line in this way. Some of you have had to give up vacation time to come here. Some of you have had to make other kinds of personal sacrifices, like getting on a plane. You know, these are not trivial. You know, many of you have been coming to Sesshin a year, season after season, year after year. And I think that's deeply admirable. You know, that's real trust in life. Doesn't mean there's not a certain level of uncertainty, right? Because this is not like finishing your book and putting in for your 10% raise. There's a high measure of uncertainty in all this. And yet all of you have come here, and even if you don't feel you have a particularly open heart or particularly generous commitment to your practice, you know, just being here testifies volumes about who you really are and what you're really capable of doing. So I have tremendous confidence in everybody here. I have tremendous confidence in your big self, and I also have tremendous confidence in your little self. You know, actually. So just coming to Sesshin shows great trust and great willingness to be confused, disappointed, betrayed, made a fool of, and so on, you know. All of those are risks involved in doing something like this. And yet, here you are. You know, and this morning, we get up at 4:30, people come in and sit in the Zendo, and it's just wonderful to see that open-heartedness. It perhaps it's something even you yourself don't see. But it's a great honor to practice with the people who have that kind of a strength of character, first of all, and that kind of open-heartedness. And as I say, the world is full of people who are not that open-hearted and don't necessarily want to go out on a limb this far. When you go out on a limb, sometimes you do fall off, right? This is inevitably so. And if you come to Sesshin, sooner or later, you're going to be a little bit disappointed. Or you're going to be a little bit, you're not going to be where you want to be. Not going to be where you want to be. And all kinds of things can happen in that case. Well, before I go on with that, let me just go back to the koan, because the story itself is important. Yesterday I was talking about washing your bowls. Today it's Tokusan and his bowls. I'm on a sort of a theme for the week, although these are the only two koans with bowls in them. So. One day Tokusan went down toward the dining room holding his bowls. See, now Tokusan is the master of the temple. It would be like going to a temple. You're a monk at a temple, or you're a nun at a temple, and the master is coming out, but it's not 8 o'clock in the morning, it's not 12:30 for lunch, and it's not 6:30. It's time for the evening sit, let's say, or it's time for us to come in and do the afternoon sutras. And you see me, and I'm wandering around with my bowls in my hand. Right? See, I mean, we leave our bowls on the table, but in a Zen temple, actually, the bowls are behind your mat. And so when it's time to eat, everybody reaches back, just as we reach for our tea bowls, and grabs the tea bowls, and grabs the dinner bowls, and picks them up, and everybody walks with their bowls into the dining hall. That's how it's done in Zen temples. You're coming in to sit, you've had your shower, it's afternoon showers, and you come in here and you see me, and I'm sitting at my place at the table waiting for dinner. Right? So, one way to interpret this is that Tokusan has made a mistake. Right? Tokusan's made some kind of a mistake. And Seppo met him and says, where are you off to with your bowls? It's not dinner time. It's not lunch time. It's not dinner time. So then Tokusan turns around and he goes back to his room. See, now you have to say, what's going on? You know, one thing you might say is that, Tokusan made a mistake, right? Tokusan made a mistake. But Tokusan's a great Zen master. One might think that great Zen masters are not supposed to make mistakes. See, Zen master's supposed to be perfect, right, in our minds. The Dalai Lama, for example, we could make this a better example, would be like the Dalai Lama. Somebody we think of as embodying the whole realization of enlightenment. So the Dalai Lama is coming to Rutgers in the fall. Maybe he'll commit some faux pas, right? It's a terrible faux pas. We hope not. But so this is kind of the idea of this koan. So Tokusan, everybody comes in to sit at 2:30 for afternoon sutras, and the teacher's sitting at the table waiting for dinner. Okay, and Seppo, his main student, says to him, where are you going? It's not dinner time. What's going on? Tokusan doesn't say anything. He just goes back to his room. But immediately, talk begins to spread around the temple. And people say, maybe Tokusan is not really enlightened. You know, maybe he hasn't really fully realized deep awakening. Because, look, he's made this colossal blunder. You know, if you were really awake, wouldn't you be present in the moment at all times? I mean, wouldn't you always be in the moment, fully realizing your enlightened mind? How could an enlightened person make such a terrible blunder? See, and of course, people are whispering. Seppo says this to Ganto, and Ganto says to Seppo, Seppo, after he sees the teacher behaving this way and making this mistake, Seppo goes to Ganto, who's another senior monk, and he says, God, the weirdest thing happened, I just saw Tokusan, who's supposed to be enlightened, and he was waiting for his lunch at 2:30 in the afternoon. And then Ganto says to Seppo, well, Seppo, I hate to tell you this, but Tokusan's a pretty decent teacher. But he still hasn't realized the highest level of awakening. See, what you just saw was an example of the fact that he's not fully awake. Not yet. So in the story, Tokusan heard this remark, and he sent his attendant to fetch Ganto, and he says, "You don't approve of me?" See, and what Ganto is going around saying is basically, Tokusan is renowned, but he doesn't know the last word of Zen, the final highest peak of enlightenment he hasn't reached. So that's the part of the koan I want to focus on today, because all of us have in our minds a kind of Tokusan figure, right? And Tokusan is like the Dalai Lama, he's Lin Ji, he's Shen Yan, he's, you know, you can name a great Zen master, he's a Shu Yun, you know, great teacher. There's actually a kind of an archetype in our hearts of this great teacher. We all carry it around, this person who's a perfectly realized, right? And all of us are trying to become that person, yeah? And that's good and that's bad, because when we're not a fully realized, enlightened master, we can get very unhappy with our practice and very disappointed in ourselves. And this is not a good thing, you know, because in fact, you know, even the Dalai Lama is not fully realized. Even the Buddha, not fully realized. Why is this so? Well, I'm going to let that question hang in the air, but please keep it somewhere in your heart. But it's very important to understand that all beings make mistakes and that no one is fully realized. And that there's nothing wrong, really, with not being fully realized. There's nothing wrong with not being fully awake. So teachers have to set a standard for people because they want them to cultivate the way. And when you create a standard, you actually create opportunity for people to use the standard. Let me rephrase this. Standards can become obstacles. Okay? Standards can become obstacles, and it's a fine line every teacher has to walk, because you set a standard and then it can become a terrible obstacle. So, you know, when you come in to sit on day two of a session in the morning, it's possible that you're tired. Wasn't that possible today? You know, might be a little tired. And it's possible that some of you were even dozing during the sit. Yeah? So you're sitting, but really you're like, mentally you're snoozing. Right? Now, you know, one style of responding to this is to go around with a stick and go, "No sleeping, no sleeping." And indeed, it's true that if you sleep your sesshin away, you won't accomplish very much. But my own feeling about this is that when people are really beat, they're going to sleep on the cushion even if you scream at them. And that after a while, people are not going to be so tired, and then they'll be able to sit a little better. See, there's a kind of natural way or middle way in practice. And it means people are going to be less than 100%, but that's okay, because if you just sit long enough, your better self is going to emerge naturally. I actually believe that deeply. And so it's very important for all of you not to judge yourselves too harshly. If you are sitting in excruciating pain and you move, I won't think less of you, okay? I really won't. If you move every 2 minutes, you know, everybody in the room will want to strangle you, you know, and that's a different thing. We all might come over and do it. Collectively. But But you know, you're making a good faith effort, and you're thinking, I'm going to get through this sit, I'm going to get through this sit, and then like 2 minutes before I ring the bell, you think, that's it, I've got to move. And you move, and the next thing you know, the bell rings, and you think, oh damn it, you know, I failed again, right? Please don't think in those terms, you know. What really matters is your intentionality, really. You know, you came to Sesshin, and you're trying to wake up, and you're doing your best, you know. And basically that's all you have to do, is your best. And if in any particular sit the pain becomes overwhelming, and you move, I've already, you know, I forgive you, but it's much harder for you probably to forgive yourself. So, you know, you come into the Sesshin and you think, this is the one where I'm going to answer my koan. Now, you're working on this koan for years. This is it, I'm going to do it. You know, one way to have a really horrible experience is to go into Dokusan and just realize I don't have the answer, and then come back to the cushion and really just hate yourself for a while, right? And this is a danger of Zen practice. You create a path and then it can become a barrier. You create a standard and it can become a barrier. So, you know, there's nothing wrong with not having the answer, so to speak, to your koan. I mean, there isn't really an answer to the koan. The koan is inviting you, or opening up the possibility of having a certain kind of experience. And if it doesn't come, it doesn't come. You know, just do your best, and then forgive yourself if things don't work out the way you want. And I think, basically, if you can forgive yourself, you can forgive everybody else, and you can forgive the world. You know, my feeling is that people get bummed out because they can't forgive themselves for not being Tokusan, you know, not being perfect. It's enough to care, and it's enough to try your best. And then forgive yourself if the results are not what you want. And in fact, you know, often the results are better than what you wanted if you can just forgive yourself. This is so important. This is like the essence of Zen practice. You know, it's very hard sometimes for people to wake up. You know, the great Zen master, Shu Yun, didn't have his Kensho experience until he was in his 50s. Toward the end of it, and you can say, well, I'm already in my 50s. But he started practicing when he was about 18 years old. So he was sitting for something like 35 years, more than that, before he had had his Kensho experience. And he had many obstacles, you know. He couldn't answer his koan for years and years and years and years. And he could have gotten bitter about it. He could have gotten angry. But instead what he did was exactly the right thing. He tried to express his love, his faith in the world, whether or not he ever answered the koan. So what he did was to go on a pilgrimage. In China there are five sacred mountains. I think five, is that right? Four sacred mountains. And he went on a pilgrimage. It took him years walking to each of the sacred mountains of China. And he spent many years doing solitary practice, but he would always come to Sesshin at a nearby temple also. And it took him a long time to wake up. When he did, everybody said he was the greatest Zen master in centuries. So, you know, there's not a timetable for enlightenment. It's not about doing it in under 10 years. You know, that's not the point. And Zen is not about being perfect. See, that's like a poison. You know, perfecting, the desire for perfection is like poison. Because so often what we are really being shown by our big mind is not what we expect. And not what we expect. And so we miss what is really the objective. Because we have this image in our minds of the way things should be. You know, some of you may remember when we used to have sesshin at my house. Jaru used to come, and Al, and Jackie and Alex came on one occasion. Imtiaz has been there many times. I'm trying to think if anybody else is from this sesshin has been there. I guess not. But you know, we would have a sesshin like this. You know, when people used to come to my house for sesshin, I would work hard days in advance to get ready, because I'm supposed to be a Zen teacher, Zen master, so called. And so Zen masters are not supposed to have dirty houses, right? So I would clean this house from top, literally from the attic to the basement, you know. And I would go up on the attic and I would vacuum and I would dust and I would mop the floor. I'd make the bed, I'd scrub the toilet, and the next floor, and the next floor, and the basement, you know. And just before everybody came, it would be very clean and neat. And then one of our cats would come in the house and be nervous because something was going on and he'd pee-pee somewhere. Right? So, if you read the stories of the great Zen masters, there's no pee-pee in the temple. Especially cat pee-pee, right? Very smelly. I would go around the house trying to find the mystery pee-pee, right? Sticking my nose in the corners. Where is it? It's somewhere in this damn room, you know? So when people come to sesshin, you know, sometimes there's kitty cat pee-pee. This is also Buddha, yeah? This is also Buddha. You know, now I could have gotten bummed out. I could have gotten on the phone and called everybody and said, that's it. You know, there's no sesshin. You know, this is not what I had imagined. You know, this, nobody wants to come and smell cat piss for 5 days. Yeah. But fortunately I didn't, you know. And nobody left, I'm glad to say. Maybe people noticed and maybe they didn't. Maybe I did find the spot. I don't know. Another time, we had sesshin, about four houses down from me, my neighbor decided to put, you know, I live in an older neighborhood, and the yards are not very big. It's not like these giant houses that people build today. And my neighbor, about four houses down, decided to put in a swimming pool in his backyard. And you wouldn't think there was room, but, you know, in the middle of sesshin, there's a bulldozer and backhoe going, and every time the backhoe takes a bunch of dirt out of the ground, it dumps it in a truck, and every time the backhoe hits the truck, it makes the sound of metal hitting metal, like boom, boom, boom. This went on for days. Strangely, people answered their koans. You know, in fact, a couple people answered the mu koan during that sesshin, in spite of everything. We had another sesshin where, remember, you know, people give up time, they come from a distance to come to sesshin, and I myself value sesshin very highly, you know. Another time we had a sesshin, what do you know, the city of Plainfield decides to take down the oak tree in front of my house during sesshin. You know, so many times I get up in the morning and I walk out, I live on this little street, and I think it's so quiet here. And when my wife and I bought the house, we bought it for sesshin partly because it has a lot of bathrooms. And And it was in a secluded neighborhood, not too much traffic. So usually you think, gosh, what a quiet place. So everybody comes for Sesshin, and what do you know? Okay, so you might think, they're going to take the tree down. How long will that take? 2 days. 2 days. So you come into the Zendo, everybody's sitting. Plus, I used to have a neighbor who had one of those weed whackers, you know, and he'd whack the weeds while we were sitting in the Zendo, and then he would blow the yard with the blower. And he was like insane, right? Because he would blow every leaf, every grain of dirt, you know. So it would be like, how long is this going to go on? You know? And yet, you know, people woke up. You know, somehow people woke up. And, you know, I could have said, that's it, we're calling the session, you know. You know, there's too much damn noise. Some guy's building a swimming pool 3 doors down. But that's the moment we were in, right? That's the moment we were in. And if it bothers you, the problem is your problem, right? In fact, when it bothers you, you see that something's not right with your own heart. See, but what do? You forgive yourself. And you say, okay, I'm human. I have some problems with my heart. Not right, I've already forgiven myself, see? See, if you can forgive yourself, you can forgive anybody else anything. And if you can't forgive yourself, you can't forgive anybody else. See, it all begins with forgiving ourselves, with love for ourselves. You know, I guess we fear that we are not going to be lovable unless we have an impeccable sit. Or unless we come into the Zendo and say, something, I don't know what it would be. And I go, oh, that's fantastic. My God, you know, that's the greatest answer I've ever heard. Here, you sit in my chair and I'll sit over here. That's great. You know. And when we don't do that, you know, we think, oh, damn it, failure again. You know, here, I knew the universe was going to let me down. But what we're really thinking is, I knew I was going to let myself down. You know, what if you go into Dokusan and you just give a stupid answer? So what? You know, so it doesn't matter. I've given thousands of them, you know, or literally hundreds of them anyway. And the Buddha did too. And there's nothing, you know, there's nothing wrong with mistakes. There's nothing wrong with imperfection. I was given a tea bowl by my teacher, Genki Roshi. He made it himself, and he gave them all to his students. And when I was one of his students, I didn't have a tea bowl for a long time at the temple, but then he made me one. And I felt that it made me very moved that he'd given me the tea bowl, but also it was sort of like saying, I was sort of like... a valued student of the teacher. I felt that this was sort of like a message saying, well, I take you seriously as a student now. So for some reason, I took the tea bowl home because I wanted to show it to somebody. I guess I wanted to show it to my wife. And it was sitting in a very safe place, and I reached it over to take it, and it jumped out of my hand and fell on the floor. I mean, it was like, oh my God, and it broke. Right? It was like the worst thing in the world. Genki Roshi had made this bowl for me, and it was tied in with all this emotional investment, and I broke it. And I couldn't go back to the Zendo with this broken. I actually spent like a couple of days going around in Seattle trying to find somebody who could mend this tea bowl. And I would go in and meet these people, and they would just laugh and say, no, no, there's no way to mend it. No, just throw it away. You know, it can't be done. I can mend it, but it won't hold water. You know, forget it. Get a new bowl. That's the way it is, you know. No. You know, I can't go back there. It was like a nightmare. Right? And, you know, I finally... I went to see Genki Roshi, and you know, he actually said to me, he said, you know, the broken bowl is the best one. And he showed me a bowl he had that was usable, but had a chip in the top. And the broken bowl is the best one. Broken bowl is the best bowl. See, when we want something to be perfect and then it's not perfect, see, that's like the best situation. Yeah? That's where it becomes possible to have a bigger heart, bigger mind. When the bowl is broken. You know, I came to this sesshin thinking I was going to sit full lotus every time. And then, you know, darn it, I just got so tired, I was in so much, I totally blew it. And this is your broken bowl. Right? I was going to prove myself this time. I was going to be lovable, finally. Finally, I was going to be worthy of love. Right? If I just do this, I'll be worthy of love. And now it's all in the toilet. And I'm my unworthy self as usual. Right? But actually, a broken bowl is best. It's the best bowl. It's when things don't go the way we want, when they fall apart, that we really can open up and see, you know, have a deep relationship with life. So, you know, this addiction to perfection is really quite a big problem. And we all have it, you know, even if we think we don't. You know, we all come to every sit thinking, okay, I'm going to be on this time. And then, you know, the mind is wandering, you think, oh, my unworthy self. My miserable, unworthy self. But, you know, please, please forgive yourself for being a human being. You know, as I said at the beginning of this, it takes great strength of character to come here, and it takes great strength of character to stay, and it actually takes great open-heartedness to take a risk like this. So, you know, I see you through very different eyes, maybe, than you see yourself. Because, you know, we all make mistakes. Nothing goes according to plan. You know, and when things don't go according to plan, that's when we begin to get panicky, angry, disappointed, self-loathing begins, these sort of patterns of behavior. Or, you know, that can be projected onto other people. Sometimes in Zen temples you'll meet people who are very upset at others because they aren't maintaining a high standard of practice. So often you'll go to Zen temples where somebody will say, well, you know, he doesn't sit full lotus all the time. Or, you know, did you see him moving around like that? You know, he can't sit. And really this is actually a projection of one's own fears. You know, so really the place to start is by just saying, I've done my best today. You know, it's really not in our, what happens is really not in our power. You know, really, nothing, remember I was talking yesterday about the brain experiment. It's really not in our power. So the art of sitting is really not about being a perfect strength of will or perfect discipline. The art of sitting is really just accepting the moment for what it is. You know, thy will be done, is what Christians say. And this is a very wise teaching, yeah? Thy will be done. Everything is Buddha, without exception. Your pain, your confusion, your not knowing, your fatigue, and embracing these things as beyond your control is really the practice of Zen. You know, you have to try, right? If you just come in and you lie down on the cushion, that's not going to work out. But there's a wisdom to, there's a rhythm to practice, or there's a wisdom to practice. You know, if you shoot a bow and an arrow, you have to pull the bow, and it's hard if you've ever actually used a bow. You put the arrow in the string, and you pull it back, and you aim at the target, and then you let it go, right? And when you draw the string, it creates great stress, right? The string stores up energy to be released momentarily. And Zen practice is like that, right? You know, you have to come in, sit on the cushion, and straighten your back and breathe properly. And you build up a certain amount of tension. And then, you know, basically there's a release. You know, you let the arrow go, and the arrow is going to go where it's going to go, right? So if you worry about where the arrow is going to go, it's going to get harder and harder to draw your bow. The point is to enjoy drawing the bow. It doesn't matter if you hit the target. Everything is the target, right? Everything is target. In this world where everything is Buddha, everything is target. You can't miss, or you always miss. It's the joy of drawing the bow, see? And that comes from having no expectations. Just being in the moment, you know. So, it's like dinner, right? You know, if you have a high standard as far as dinner is concerned, you're going to be disappointed. But if you don't mind rice, what do you think dinner's going to be? What do you think? I have the feeling you know. If you don't mind that, you've got it made, right? If your standards get too high, you're going to be disappointed. Did you come in to sit today? Yes. Did you do your best? Yes. Then you've done enough, yeah? So now try to just be in the moment. Try to just enjoy this beautiful moment. Whatever comes through your efforts is excellent. So you know, just please enjoy being in this beautiful world. We're all here together. We've come to practice. You know, let's not talk about hitting the target. Let's talk about the joy of holding the bow, letting the arrow fly, and then just see where it goes. Who knows? Could be anywhere. And it's always in the right place. So, you know, there is no last word of Zen. This is like a joke, right? There's always something. Every time you sit, you make a mistake. Every time you sit, you discover something new. Yeah? So that's why life is so wonderful. So, day two, everybody's tired, wonderful. Yeah. We're going to all be tired together, and something's going to happen after that, we don't know what. Again, wonderful. And day three is going to come, day four, and then it'll all be over, and it'll be so fast. So, just do your best, have no expectation. And then everything is absolutely 100% a gift. Everything that happens is going to be a gift, a freebie, as we said. So please enjoy it. It's quite a deal. Jo Mohan Sagando.